This is Christoph Kisun, and you're listening to Navigating Diversity, where we explore how human beings differ, yet can find ways to relate to one another in an increasingly xenophobic socio-political climate. Last week, guest Alma Jam and I discussed the topics social movements in the age of social media and developing empathy through education. You can catch our conversation at kisu.org/programs/navigatingdiversity. This week, we are continuing our conversation around racism in the United States and the Black Lives Matter movement and discussing the topics individuality or intersectionality in social activism and allyship, a process, not a destination. To help us navigate these topics today, we are joined in the studio by James Pascali, doctoral student in political science at Idaho State University. So James, what is intersectionality?
Intersectionality is this recognition that there's multiple dimensions to one's identity, that it's not a singular factor, such as obviously something like race, but the recognition that there's multiple parts of that. Something that was termed by Dr. Kimberly Crenshaw. So for instance, an intersection of identity would be something like you have race and something like social class, something like sexual orientation, and how those two parts of your identity influence not only how you are perceived by the world, but your identity itself.
It's really about looking at the whole person. You know, when you look at a human being, you don't see just the color of their skin or just their gender or what clothes they're wearing and how much money you think they have. You realize they are all of those things at the same time.
And oftentimes we revert to this lens where what we see artificially or superficially is what we identify people as. So as race, we see race, it's prevalent. So that's the identity that we then assign people. And so intersectionality, by way of Kimberly Crenshaw, is recognizing that holistic person, as you put it. So,
how can understanding intersectionality help us understand our level of privilege? Is there a connection there?
Dr. Patricia Hill Collins brought about the matrix of domination, which is this concept of privilege and oppression based on these intersections of identity. So these different factors of your identity influence how much you experience prejudice or oppression within society and how much privilege you have. So of course, we've often heard when the topic of something, for instance, white privilege comes up, you get some people that go, as a white person, how am I a person of privilege? I grew up poor. Well, according to Dr. Kimberly Crenshaw and Dr. Patricia Hill Collins, that socioeconomic status is just one factor of that identity. And so while you are given a certain degree of privilege, in fact, I would argue a lot of privilege based off of race, that you do have that factor of socioeconomic status that is influencing. So when people make that statement of, how do I have privilege? I grew up poor. They're only looking at that one myopic view of what privilege means. And so that matrix of domination really opens that up to variation.
I think one of the best definitions I got of privilege was from Sandra Carrillo, going off to grad school soon, so proud of her.
Ooh, absolutely.
She said privilege is when your skin color is not taken into account when other people perceive you or make decisions that affect your life. That's all really privilege is the absence of having that factor be taken into account.
To kind of take that a step further, if I, as a white male, step into a space, I never have to worry about how I'm perceived in that space. It's never a matter of, am I going to be denied certain services? Am I going to be treated a certain way? That in itself is privilege, to be able to navigate the world and not have to worry about that. Of course, with the discussion that's going around right now of law enforcement, the privilege of race that exists there is that we've been socially conditioned as white individuals to view law enforcement in such a way that they're there to protect us. Never once has it's been a question of whether my life or my livelihood is in jeopardy at the hands of police. Because if I'm being approached by police, there's that agreement that because of my whiteness, they're there to protect me. Mm. And so it's definitely an issue that needs to be addressed.
So how can we apply what we know about intersectionality to the Black Lives Matter movement and this entire wave of social consciousness and social activism we're seeing nationally and globally right now?
That is an excellent question, because it's something that has been increasing in sort of the public eye, especially with Black trans individuals and how they're treated within this this movement, within society and law enforcement. And that by providing an intersectional lens, we're starting to recognize that you have the Black Lives Matter movement in general, which it's become very salient, very prevalent right now. It's a movement for all Black individuals to feel like their voice is being heard and that justice is being served in proper capacity. But also looking at it through that intersectional lens of Black trans individuals is that not only are they being oppressed and targeted by law enforcement because of their Blackness, but also experiencing prejudice and oppression at the hands of law enforcement because of their transness as well. So that's an aspect of the sort of social movements that needs to be taken into account, that yes, we need to ensure that Black lives matter, but that also these other individuals and these other groups within the group, these subgroups, are not marginalized in the process.
I think of the analogy of a net. We have an opportunity to address inequality. And in my opinion, all inequality is the same. It's the same exact pattern, it's the same exact structure being played out with different content. I don't necessarily think somebody who discriminates against a Black person is discriminating any differently than against a trans person. So if we have a chance to address inequality, shouldn't we try to address inequality for everybody? Spread the net as far as you can go, right?
Of course, as us political scientists, we like to often quote Schatzsnyder, or E.E. Schatzsnyder, in his Scope of Conflict. He also spoke within his text of the heavenly chorus. And it's this notion that within these social movements, within these interest groups and these people that are organized to talk about these issues, that oftentimes they get skewed in the direction of those that have the most privilege, and that they're the ones that are running the organization. They are the ones that are on the forefront. Well, those that are within the group that are a little bit more marginalized get kind of cast aside and kind of get forgotten a little. And so I think that trying to view something like Black Lives Matter through an intersectional lens is redirecting that focus, as you said, to all the people within that movement and to where they're encompassed in the overall dialogue as well and not forgotten. And I think that that's an important thing that we need to consider.
MLK said, no man is free until every man is free. And I think there's really something there. I think in social movements, we can sometimes get a little too focused on what is happening to us as a group that's experienced a specific type of oppression without also recognizing there are many other groups in society who've been experiencing this. I think of children in detention centers. I think of all the brown and Black people locked up in prisons for petty crimes. I think of Native Americans. Where is justice for them? Native American women are the highest rates of murder and going missing in this country, and that is never reported on and talked about. There is never a hashtag that talks about that. So I want to encourage everybody to just think a bit more critically about intersectionality in your activism and play with that notion in your mind of who am I including and who am I excluding.
One thing that I wanted to point out there, and you said it beautifully there, but I think it's human nature to immediately, when you're in pain, when you're experiencing some sort of trauma, it's human nature to want that trauma addressed. I liken it to, like, if you've fallen off your bike and you've skinned your knee and you're in pain and you're like, look at my leg. But then you're not paying attention to the person on your left and to the person on your right and seeing if they're hurt, because all you can feel and all you can experience is the hurt that you're feeling in that moment. And so I think you're 100% right that while we have a movement like Black Lives Matter and recognizing the subgroups and the subcategories of marginalized groups within there through an intersectional lens, but being intersectional also means looking at systemic racism and these issues of prejudice, not just for your group, but for all these groups. So Native Americans and are certainly included in that, in the immigrant situation that's going on right now at the border, and sometimes not at the border as well, that they're experiencing prejudice. So I think that's very important that you highlight that.
Thank you so much, James. This is Christoph Kassoun, and you're listening to Navigating Diversity. James Pascali and I have been discussing the topic, individuality or intersectionality in social activism. Join us this Tuesday at 7:30 p.m. as we continue to navigate diversity and discuss the topic, Allyship, a process, not a destination. To listen and find more information on all episodes, visit kisu.org/programs/navigatingdiversity.